This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 94. Today, CJ and I are going to talk a little bit about developer stuff related to Office 365, Office, and Azure, as well as how to test your scalability of your Azure site through the data from the Ashley Madison hack, recorded live September the 2nd, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, Mr. Recently Unemployed, CJ. How are you?
That's pretty good, mate. Recently unemployed indeed. Yeah, I'm swanning around, like sitting here in my pajamas. You know, not doing much. I'm only kidding.
I will say it was quite funny yesterday. Maybe it was Monday, your first day that you were no longer like at Microsoft, I guess. I guess technically you're still at Microsoft, but you're like in between right now.
Yeah, that's right. I've got the week off.
So, but you're not going back into the office for work and that kind of stuff. So you're effectively, you're done with your last job.
Correct.
And it was a trip when you sit there. We jumped on a Skype call and we're sharing video. And you looked incredibly relaxed, like lounging with your feet up and everything. It's like, wow, you look a little, this looks kind of comfortable to you.
If I was any more relaxed, I'd be melting through the floor.
At least you were clothed. That was the good part.
Yeah, there you go. No, it's been, I finished up. Last day in the office was on last Friday. Well, I guess when this comes out, it was the Friday before last. And yeah, so I've basically been catching up on a whole bunch of things this week.
Oh, cool. Very cool. Yeah. Fun stuff.
Yeah. The kiddos start school again. I'm doing a bunch of reading and things like that.
So you say that you know, kids start school and this is the first week that you're kind of out of the last job. So you're spending a lot more time at home this week. Is there any correlation to the fact that you timed that way so that it was going to be nice and quiet the first week at your home?
Yeah.
Or at least for three quarters of the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I don't know about you, but like, I know that you have to close your door, but me, I have a little home office and I definitely have to close the door because it's like, daddy,
yeah,
daddy, daddy, every 5 seconds.
Well, your home office, like the door, if you walked out of your home office and you made an immediate right, there's the door to the garage. And if you went straight, like what, 10 feet, you're in the kitchen.
Yeah,
so you're,
exactly. Yeah.
You're not exactly I live in a house that's like a big, think about it like a giant two, not giant, think about it as a two-story square where the center of it's wide open. And so all the rooms are on the outside of the quote-unquote square. You come up the stairs on one side and all around the other, you have to walk all the way around to the extreme other side to get to my office. So it's like, if you're coming to the office, it's a deliberate decision to come to the office. There's no bedrooms over where I am. There's nothing. So I can easily hide, not like you.
That sounds a lot more productive.
It is. It's even better when the doors are shut because then I can't hear anything.
Yeah, nice.
It's awesome.
Nice.
They don't like it though because I crank up the music and the I've got one of those, the Bose like computer speaker systems. And so the sub on the floor, they can hear the banging. Are you working up there? Are you in a rave? And I'm like, no, that's coding. That's a third option.
Yeah. Music to code by.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hey, before we get into the meat and potatoes, I love interrupting before we start the shows and sidelining you with something random.
Let's go.
Hey, we got a new review, I think.
Oh.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but we got one from Tim Farrow.
I think that is new.
In iTunes. It says...
oh, I know Tim.
At Tim Farrow is his handle on Twitter. He's a MVP, MCP, author, speaker, blogger, and senior software engineer and senior SharePoint developer.
And all-around good guy.
TimFarrow.com. So his iTunes review says, seriously, get your cloud news here. One of my favorite and must listen to podcasts. This is the best way to stay up to date on everything cloud. The info is great and the banter is even better. Met them both in person. They're hilarious. Thank you, Tim. Make time for this podcast and cut down having to read a ton of RSS feeds. Great work, guys.
That's going to cost us $20.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot,
Thanks
Tim.
Thanks very much, Tim. That's awesome.
Yeah, very, very much appreciated. Very much appreciated. This is getting a lot of fun. We are like 6 episodes away from 100 episodes.
Oh, and we've got a pretty good one cooking up for 100, right?
Well, I think I don't know. Our listeners may not be as excited about it, but I think you and I are more excited about it.
I think so. Yeah.
And I think that
our listeners will be like.
I think that the other part of it too is a little more nervous.
Okay, they've totally gone off the rails.
And the other side of it too is a little nervous about it. So it's like we're excited about it. I'm really anticipating it. The other Let's just say that we have some special guests. How's that?
Yeah, we got special guests. That's right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's right. Yeah. I never thought we'd get Sergey Brin.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I can't believe Bill Gates decided to come on the show. Right. That's amazing.
It's going to be exciting.
Awesome.
Yep. Got to get the satellite truck, though, to beam it straight from his house. He wanted to do it from home. We'll fill you guys in on the details in 6 episodes.
Yeah, they need satellite because Google Fiber never made it to his house yet. Much like 99.99999% of the world.
Well, apparently no fiber's ever made it to an Apple streaming event, so that's okay.
Oh, the burn.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, let's dive into some news.
That really does irritate me. Anyway.
It does, yeah. Let's dive into some news.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to start out with Office 365, then we're going to pivot over into Azure, and then talk a little bit about some porn. Sorry, some Ashley. how about some infidelity? No, wait. How about how to scale your site based on data from the Ashley Madison hack?
Yeah, excellent. Let's do that. Let's talk about how Azure handles that.
Yeah, but you have to stay tuned. That's the end of the show. So I guess one thing that we'll throw out there, a little bit of Office or Office 365 or Office on-prem. I don't know. It's really Office client news.
It's developer news, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped about this. I mean, a little bit of disclaimer. I was a bit involved in this, but it was a lot of fun to see the adoption or the acceptance by Microsoft for this. So the Office dev team, specifically spearheaded by Jeremy Thake, they have a generator. It's a Yeoman generator. So what Yeoman is a command line tool that you can think of it as pretty much replacing the Visual Studio file new project dialog. So you pick a template in Visual Studio and it stubs out a project for you. Well, outside of Visual Studio, you don't really have tools that do that file new project thing. Some IDEs do it, but I guess, you know, take it to the extreme example over in the Mac world or the OS X development world, they don't use IDEs as much. They use much more. They use more editors like Visual Studio Code or Sublime or Atom. And there's no file new project to stub out the code for that. And so what they do instead is they use this thing called Yeoman. So Yeoman is you have different generators that are kind of plug into Yeoman. And when you run it from the command line, it'll ask the generator, depending on what the generator is, it asks you a bunch of questions and it stubs out the files for you. So it's just you basically build a template and then it asks questions and you fill it in. So what we did is what the Office dev team has now is a generator that you can say Yo Office, which that's pretty freaking cool from the command line, just saying Yo Office.
Yo Office.
And it'll prompt you and essentially walks you through stubbing out all the stuff you need for creating a Office client add-in. So either a mail, task pane, or content add-in. And when it does that, it lets you choose, do you want to use HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, the same thing that we get essentially that you would get from Visual Studio, or you can say, I want to do an Angular-based one. So it stubs out the code you need for an Angular-based add-in. So there's a lot of stuff that we could do with this. We say it's applicable really to people that are primarily on Office, that are not on Windows and Visual Studio. But I mean, hey, that Angular one, you could take advantage of that. You know, stub out your project and then open up Visual Studio, create a new project and import the stuff in and hey, you're off to the races. So,
oh yeah. Nice little, starter scaffolding thing.
Yeah.
I was playing around with Yeoman yesterday with an Angular and Node project, which was like pretty sweet. And it, you know, generated some scaffolding for me. I used a generator for that and make it a really nice, easy way to go.
Yeah.
Yo Office and then walk through a set of steps to get some, scaffolding for your project.
Yeah. So if you're out there and you're a .NET developer and you're thinking, why would I use this? I would kind of ask the same thing, right? Because you've got Visual Studio, you got File New Project. If you like Visual Studio, this isn't going to give you a whole lot. But if you are the kind of person that does not want to use Visual Studio, you want to go more with a text editor, or you like a lightweight editor like Visual Studio Code, or if you're not even on Windows and Visual Studio, it's designed for you. And I think that what this really does show is how open and accepting the Office, Microsoft as a whole, but also specifically the Office group is to people who are not your traditional, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, Microsoft developers, your traditional .NET or Visual Studio guys. It's really opening up to have a bigger development audience. And so,
absolutely. Yeah, that one, I can say this now, I've left, right? But I can say anything I want now, surely? That's not.
You're technically still on payroll, man. Watch out.
Yeah, that's true. No, I was just going to say, like, it was one of our focuses before I left, and I'm sure Jeremy, you know, this is one of his going forward is attracting non-Microsoft developers, right? Because although there are a lot of Microsoft devs, and we've got a great tooling story with Visual Studio, there are a lot of developers that live outside of that world that we're just a lot of us are just not even exposed to that world, right? And if we're caught up in enterprise on-prem development, right? Yeah. But there's a ton of other developers doing things. And these tools have come a long, long, long way.
Yeah, it's, you know, it really showed to me. I mean, I've done two or three Angular conferences this year. And when I go talk to them, I always talk about Office 365 and Azure. But I tell you, the one that it seems to always just really interest them is when I talk about Office add-ins. And so having something like this to show them, yeah, here's how you start a project, it's really just catering to that interest. And so it's cool. I mean, I know that there was a little, when this came out, there were some people who, the traditional devs were like, why are we doing this? Why aren't we focusing on .NET or whatever? It's like, you know what? You can focus on more than one thing at a time. It's a big company that can do that. And I'm happy that they are at least welcoming this, and it's not at the expense of anything.
The world has moved on from a one thing rules all, right?
Yeah.
There is no single choice anymore.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's some nice Office Dev news. We've got one more on Office Dev news, actually, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, this one I was pumped about. You want to introduce it?
Yeah, sure. It's got a ton of good news and tweets and retweets and got pickup in the press and all sorts of things, but it's the Office UI Fabric. Golf clap for you.
Oh, yeah.
To steal a term. So the Office UI Fabric is a GitHub repo, and there's a blog up on the Office blogs about it. But in a nutshell, it is a framework that consists of things like imagery and styles and fonts and things and some controls to help you theme your web application or style it in the same manner as, say, Office to make it fit nicely. And so this could be used if you're building an Office add-in and, you know, surfacing it in, say, Outlook or Excel or what have you, or it could be for a SharePoint add-in or something along those lines. And it basically consists of like a set of styles and imagery and controls, fonts, iconography, typography, some animation stuff, responsive grid, and some localization things, as well as some components we'll get into in a second. But it means that you don't have to spend a whole ton of your time trying to style it and sort of imitating what Office would look like. And it just gets you there a whole bunch faster. And it's really exciting because it means that you could build apps much easier and quicker and have them look good.
Yeah, this is exciting for me because, I mean, back in February, I penned a blog post and started a user voice request or submission or whatever you want to call it. Where I was asking for what I was calling a design pack. And I mean, we've got these other design packs that people are familiar with. Developers have heard of Bootstrap. Developers have potentially heard of Material Design. That's Google's design language, just like Microsoft has one that we used to call Metro. Now Microsoft calls Modern Design. Most people still call it Metro. And so what we have is that, you know, as a developer, when I'm building stuff that works with Office 365 or works with SharePoint, whether it be an add-in for SharePoint or an add-in for Office or just a self-standing website, I personally, as a developer, I really want a cool language spec or design spec that my app is going to look just like Office or Office 365 because it's going to save me from having to train my users. And let's face it, devs, the worst thing that the number one thing we hate to do next to timesheets is training end users. So I'd still put both of those above documentation. And so what I really, really like the fact that now you've got these cool reusable components and they're incredibly easy to use. They're really simple to use. The guys on the Office UI Fabric team have done a phenomenal job with this. There's a few things that, of course, you know, you see it and it's like going, hey, wait a minute, where's this? But I mean, let's just hit I can give you the hot button things. There's a drop-down list. There's a dialogue thing. There's a thing for doing forms. There's a thing for doing a table of data. There's a thing for doing a list. So it looks like the same kind of list you would have. Like if you're opening up the Outlook web app or Outlook and you see a list of all your emails, I mean, they're right there. It shows like a list with like, how do I show like a new item? How do I show unread? How do I show selected? How do I do the layout? All that stuff is there for you. There's even a people picker.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet, isn't it? Like the contact or the persona cards and things. I mean, the reason it looks good and the reason they've done a good job is because we Microsoft, use it in Office 365 for some of our products. So like some of the sweet branding, the nav across the top, OneDrive.com uses it, Outlook.com, Delve. There's actually a sort of an image in the blog post up on the blog post announcing this that shows how Delve uses it and the styles that are used and things like that. So you can see how it's used in Office 365 by the product itself. So it's great because that means that it'll evolve with the product. It'll also mean that more stuff gets added to it and that you know that it's being tested and used in a real world scenario.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I liked about it was that, well, I should say the other thing I liked about it. What I did is I took what they had done. I built this little utility, this little website, and also an Excel task pane add-in to help manage my fantasy football draft. So I know this is kind of a geeky, maybe going a little bit overboard, but I built these two little pieces that would help manage a fantasy football draft where from Excel, I could go through and show the selections, and then those would show up inside of a draft board, single page app that ran on my TV in my living room. So everybody could see these things, all the picks and stuff. And I found it really easy to integrate, really easy to add to it. It was a really clean UI. Actually, some of the guys in the league were like, hey, that thing looks just like the Outlook. I'm like, yes, it does. Some guys like, hey, that looks just like the thing we use at work. I'm like, what do you use? They go, Office, like 24. I'm like 365. And they're like, yeah, Office 365. I'm like,
Office 24.
I'm like,
I like it.
It's like, that's pretty cool. So
it's kind of catchy.
Yeah. Nobody was in a techie in the draft.
Did Jack Bauer pop out of it?
Yeah, it did. It did. Yeah. Actually, it was Bill Gates. Like,
classic.
It is pretty cool. But yeah, so I encourage people to go take a look at it. I put a blog post out showing the screenshots of the little fantasy football thing that I put up. And I've had a few people ask about, hey, can we see the code for this? And I'm not ready to show you the code for the fantasy football thing because I'll be honest, I coded this thing between sessions. So
was it a little hacky?
Oh, it was very hacky. There was a lot of copy paste of code. There was no like, someone's like, I showed it to one guy and he's like, hey, why don't you just take the nav and create a little thing and include the nav as a different view and just have it surface between the two and look at all the views that are available. And it just kind of shows them dynamically and sets the selected state on each one dynamically. I'm like, because I was just trying to get this thing working. Yeah. So yeah.
It's a copy paste app.
Yeah, it definitely was. And so it'll be, I'm going to go through, I'm going to polish it up and use this like a little reference sample over time, but go take a look at this stuff. It's pretty easy. It's all up on GitHub. There's a ton of samples they got. They've done a really good job with it. I will tell you one thing about it too. One of the first requests I had when I saw this pop up, I asked, hey, do we have any Angular directives for this to make it easier to work with Angular with these add-ins? So I posted an issue to the GitHub issues list for the repo, and all these people started chiming in with plus ones, plus ones, plus ones. And I've talked to the team, gone back and forth, and they've essentially asked, you know, hey, it'd be great if it was a community thing. Do you want to run with it? So I've created a repository. Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, it'll be a little more polished, but I'll put a link to it in the show notes. There's a repo in there. I want to get up the whole like contribution and community guidelines and how you submit pull requests, because we want to make sure, well, I want to follow the same process that they've done. There's one for material, there's one for Bootstrap, so that we have things like we have good test coverage in it. And so things aren't being thrown together and this thing isn't really accepted, you know, widely accepted. So I'm going to put some structure around this. It'll be a community thing by the community for the community. And I mean, who knows, Microsoft may even give us a hand with this, but regardless, we want to go through, we want to push this thing out. I'm going to want to use it. I'll work on the components that I'm going to put in my apps, and then we'll just hopefully some other people will add their own stuff. So
yeah,
stay tuned for that. We'll talk more about that later.
Super cool.
Yeah. But hey, I can use this to pivot to Azure.
Yeah, go for it.
So what I did about 45 minutes before the draft, I did something absolutely stupid. I started tweaking my code base.
Oh, just fix this one thing.
Yes.
That's what you said, right?
Exactly.
When you first started, you're like, a developer's app is never done.
Exactly. Yeah. It's always shipped, but it's not finished.
Right. I'll just change this one little thing. Next thing you know, you're refactoring the whole lot. You're probably changing all the frameworks that you started using and changing all the schema of your data at the back end and just basically effectively rebuilding the app, right? We all do it.
I will tell you that in that 45 minutes, all of a sudden I was like, oh, let's add Socket.io and let's add this and let's add this. And I'm like, no. And thank God it was all like, and thankfully I had it all in like a little private Git repository. I blew my local code base. Like, no, clone that back down. Let's just add Azure Application Insights to it.
Nice.
So this was cool. I added App Insights to it and I used the ability with the SDK. So for those of you who don't know, App Insights is very much like Google Analytics. So I can add a little bit of JavaScript to my app. And I didn't do anything server-side in this app. It was all client-side. And so I just went through and have a couple like client-side things that I was tracking. So one of the things that I was tracking was I went through and said, every time you went to a different screen within the app, I logged that as a different, essentially like a page view, but it really was a screen view, single page app.
Yeah.
I logged it, the differences if you were in Excel or if you were in the browser. And then I also, every time someone clicked on something like submitted a draft pick or clicked on a team to see their roster, I went through and I logged all those in what are called custom events. And then I added custom data all, to all that stuff. And just to see how it all looked at over the course of the draft. And holy moly, man, App Insights is freaking amazing.
Yeah, you mentioned, you showed me a couple of screenshots and it's pretty cool. Like at first I was like, huh, how does that differ from Google Analytics? But then you talked to me about a couple of different things you think it was really kick-ass at, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can do custom view, custom page views and custom events with Google Analytics. And I think you can even do the custom data with it as well. But I thought that the charts and the visualizations coming in app and Azure Apps Insights was pretty freaking slick. Now, I just use the free edition of it as well. So I got some simple stuff and I can kind of click through and drill in deeper and deeper. And I found it really intuitive to use, easier to use, frankly, than Google Analytics. But the other thing that I really liked about it, so, and the other thing with App Insights is that there is also a server-side component that you can plug into it as well. And you can see things like what's the responsiveness of your server-side solution and the responsiveness of the client-side solution. And with mine, those server-side pieces, they were all those charts are blank. But the other thing you can do is if you pay for it, and there's different levels you can pay for, you can actually have App Insights do a continuous export of your data to an Azure storage blob. And then let's take this even further. Maybe I set up something like Power BI to ingest that data continuously and have even more robust analytics and stuff and like cool animations and everything beyond what I get in App Insights, but based on the same data.
Yeah, that would be really cool, right? Because then you can basically use whatever sort of analytics front end you want, or it could be either you're sucking it into a custom app or you're pulling it into, like you said, Power BI or Excel even, and modeling it and pivoting it and doing whatever you want. And maybe publishing custom reports or publishing it to your intranet or, you know, all sorts of different things. I mean, at that point, your choices are limitless, right?
Yeah. It was pretty slick. So it was, I do plan on writing a little, I'm working on a project now that I got to wrap up by the end of the week, but I'm looking forward to writing a blog post about it that hopefully will come out right around the time that this episode goes live.
Yeah.
Where I'll show some of the code and how easy it was to add it. I mean, it only took me 30 minutes to add this stuff. It was really surprising how fast I throw it together. So
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. They did a really good job with it. Really good job with it.
That's awesome. Well, I guess that's all about telling what's happening in your app, right? Mm-hmm. We've also got some news that looks at the Ashley Madison hack and from TroyHunt.com's blog. So Troy Hunt is an MVP and a Pluralsight author as well. And he runs a website called Have I Been Pwned, which basically it's been around for quite a while. And you go in and you can sign in or use your email address and they'll verify your email address. And then they'll tell you out of all the different data dumps or data hacks that have been on around the world or have happened around the world, like the Adobe one, the Ashley Madison one, mail.ru, there's a bunch of them, whether you've been pwned and whether your email address was compromised as part of one of those data breaches. And so he runs this website, Have I Been Pwned, pwned.com, Have I Been pwned.com. And he runs it on Azure. And what was really interesting is obviously the Ashley Madison data hack came out. And so he downloaded it and started looking at the data and wired it up into his website. And of course, it's a pretty popular website and it got slammed, right? He got inundated in traffic. And there is a really great article we'll link to in the show notes up on TroyHunt.com entitled How Did Have I Been Pwned Perform on Azure? An Ashley Madison Retrospective. And it's a really great article. It goes into lots and lots of detail about how his website dealt with the massive influx of traffic and transaction load that he saw after Ashley Madison and people checking their email addresses and things.
Mm-hmm.
And it is quite a long post. It talks about, you know, response times and sessions and numbers of users on the site and the error rates and the issues that he had, how the APIs behind the website coped, the SQL database backend stuff, and really just a fascinating look at how a website responded in such a under such load and so forth. So definitely something worth looking at and reading if you're building a scalable website on Azure,
yeah.
A SaaS-based type thing on Azure, and how Azure basically took it in its stride.
Yeah, he didn't. It looks like I see from the post, he definitely has a bunch of his data is all listed inside of, he has a lot of stuff where a lot of his analytics came from Google Analytics. But I mean, I think that once you start digging deeper into the bit, he starts to show some of the server-side stuff with that came from his Azure management dashboard. So you can see some of the details there. And I wonder going back to...
he also uses New Relic as well.
Yeah, also uses New Relic to track some of the stuff. I wonder if he had switched over to using App Insights, if he could see both a consolidated view of server-side and client-side stuff, whereas I think Google Analytics is only giving him the client-side stuff.
I think you're probably right, yeah.
And so that's one of the cool things. That's one of the advantages I was talking about a second ago with it. But it's really freaking cool. It's like, I want to say, he sent 122 gigabytes out via his CDN service over the course of 5 days.
That's incredible.
Oh, it's nuts.
Here's another interesting stat. He had over 2 million sessions, which comprised of about 1.7 million unique users, from Monday the 17th through Sunday the 23rd. So for 1 week after the hack, had 2 million sessions on the site and 100% uptime.
Oh, and here's the kicker. Here you go. Here's the kicker for it. To do that, he had one web app running, one medium-sized web app, one large web app, a couple CDNs, a geo-redundant Azure storage. For queues and tables, and three different SQL databases, an S0, an S1, and an S2, and all of that for this entire spike of over about 5 or 6 days, it was $170. And he said the entire episode cost me about $130 for Azure to serve 3 million pages to 1.5 million users.
Isn't that crazy?
That's pretty cool.
Isn't that crazy? $170 odd, something like that in total. Yeah, and that many page views, that many users hitting your site. That's incredible. Like, there's no way you could have done that in the past, especially for such a spike for a short period of time, right? Like, it's, you know, this load will last a few weeks at the most, right? As opposed to a few months. And I imagine. And so that's pretty crazy.
Did you scroll to the bottom?
What are you giggling about?
Did you scroll to the bottom of the article?
And he did it all while he was skiing?
Yeah, he did the whole thing while he was skiing. He's got a picture of himself with someone who actually was holding up his phone. Look, must be his wife. It kind of looks like a girl. I can't tell with all the ski gear, but it looks like a lady. She's holding up an iPhone, and you can see the reflection in his goggles of her, like with her jaw on the ground. And he says over these three crazy days, his site on Azure served 4 million page views, up to 10,000 simultaneous users querying 220 million records with an average of 41 milliseconds, while costing him $130 for 100% uptime, according to New Relic. That's pretty cool.
What? That's awesome.
I thought I'd read this whole story. Now I'm looking at it, I'm like, wow, there's a lot of stuff here I didn't read.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating read. I read the whole thing, and it's pretty good.
Man.
So yeah, so he did it all while he was off skiing. I actually think that's his kid in the photo, by the way.
Oh, you think so?
And I think he's holding his iPhone, it looks like, and taking a selfie.
You're right. There's the comments. I was not going to miss any snow time, so each time my son and I got back to the chairlift, I whip up my iPhone and fire up an RDP session to the VM I use to manage everything. That's awesome.
I just thought it was a really fascinating story about Azure scalability and giving you some sort of deep insights into how a site performed over that crazy time.
Yeah, that's really cool. And that's quite a spike in data too.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, you go use the website haveibeenpwned.com and go see if your email address has been compromised. It's pretty interesting.
You know, it's funny that you say that. So have you searched for your email address? Not that you would be in there, right?
I'm doing it right now.
Okay, so I went and did it because I heard this story about, this is totally off, totally tangent, nothing to do with
it. Oh no, I've been pwned.
Really?
Yeah, part of the Adobe breach.
Oh, I was.
My email address was part of it.
Yeah, I'm in that one. So I went and there's another site that I went to where you could do a search for your email. Well, I had heard before I even tried this one. I went and did a search for it. I was like, well, let me go through and let me take a search for it. Because I had actually heard some stories of people's emails be getting in there that were not actually part of it. And afterwards, I come to find out that some of the sites that you would search for, your name would get added to the database just by searching for your name.
Yeah, that's pretty.
So I go and I put my...
No surprise, right? Because it's totally phishing for gathering email addresses.
Yeah, it's a great way to go through and grab emails. So I go through and I plug my... no reason to believe this. Just like, let me just see if somebody's done that to us. So I plug my wife's email in there. And I don't... You know, I'm lazy or I'm impatient. I just saw some text show up and I was like, oh... And it said, congratulations in green text. And I'm like, I froze. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. My wife is in this thing. So then I go back and I plug my name in or my email address in. And it says, congratulations in green text. And I look a little bit closer and it goes, congratulations, your email was not found. And I'm like, you know what? You do red text when you're not found. You do green text when you are found, and you don't say congratulations. And I get you, it's congratulations, you don't want to be, and it's really the outcome that you wanted. You didn't want to be found in this thing. But I'm like, you know, that's, yeah, totally freaked me out for a minute.
That's hilarious. Yeah, there was a really good article on NPR about a guy who ended up being in the data breach, but he hadn't used the website, or so he said. But it was fascinating, right? Because basically, Ashley Madison, you could sign up without doing email verification. So I could sign up as you, right? And with your email address, and you'd never be any the wiser. And so this guy used the reset my password function on Ashley Madison and reset this guy's, whoever this person was who used his email address, reset the password, logged in, checked out the photo, and sure enough, it wasn't of him. Checked out a whole bunch of details about this guy. And anyway, they tracked him down to somewhere in Florida and found out, like, basically proved to his wife that it wasn't, you know, that it wasn't him that had signed up. And then they, I think they ended up getting in touch with him somehow or something along those lines. It was pretty interesting, though.
It's crazy. I mean,
no email validation. That just seems crazy. Anyway,
it does. And apparently, they have the company that owns Ashley Madison. They haven't even contacted any of their customers about this.
They've come out and said, like, we're signing up, like, this is all publicity for us and it's really helped. And like, they're signing up hundreds of thousands more customers.
I saw, what was it, the other, I went and they said, finally when the news started to break that the data dump was out there, someone said, oh, it's worse than we thought because it's actually all, I forget what the name of the parent company is, but it was like Avid Life, I think is what it is. And they said it wasn't just Ashley Madison. It was all of their sites that got all the data from this parent company and they put it out there. And I'm like, well, I know I'm not Ashley Madison, but do they own another site that I use? So I go to the parent site, find the parent site.
Parent company, maybe.
And they have a little link there. It says, check out our brands. And I check out their brands and I'm like going, oh, look, we own Ashley Madison, Cougar Life. I'm like, nope, not in that one. And another one that's related to that same stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I think I'm okay.
Yep, you're clean. Yeah, nice. All right. So yeah, that was the troyhunt.com. Great blog post.
Yeah. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes, as well as the Office UI Fabric and the Yeoman Generator. We'll put links to the Office dev team, their blog posts about this. I think Jeremy put up a really good video up of the Yeoman Generator that they have. Yeah, so all fun, good stuff, man.
Yeah, nice. It's there's a lot going on.
There is,
and it's good to stay on top. It's just I find these things just totally fascinating reading, you know, because you learn from other people's experiences. And Troy Hunt's a great guy, blogs about really interesting stuff, and worth keeping up on.
Absolutely. Hey, so there was one thing I wanted to kind of ask our listeners. If I would love to get someone on our show to talk to them about like the NoSQL database options in Azure.
Oh yeah, that's a great idea.
There's always table storage from the Azure storage piece, but I'm specifically interested in talking to anybody who's got some production work with DocumentDB. So I've got some specific questions for you, but I know that, you know, you see the questions come up a lot in most. You know, I think that most of our listeners are traditionally SharePoint people, so they're traditionally SQL and .NET people. So you're thinking relational databases, this concept of a NoSQL database. When you go watch some of the videos that are up on the Azure side about DocumentDB, it looks so just loosey-goosey throwing stuff at a file store, and it knows how to go through and do SQL on it to pull the data back out.
We might just be old, man.
Well, I'm definitely going to use it. Like, I wanted to use it for that fantasy football thing that I did. I ended up just going poor man's, where we just read and wrote to JSON files.
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's a great example of where you could chuck stuff in a NoSQL database.
Yeah, but it definitely could have gotten better, because towards the end of the draft, my site started to get kind of slow reading a 4 or 5 meg JSON file.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah.
Well, I forgot to take out the white space too. That wasn't really
good. Yeah, no compression. Sounds like my poor man's CMS I built years ago that just read and wrote XML files.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, no database required. Sweet.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Wanna wrap it?
Yep. Have a good one, AC.
You do the same, CJ. Enjoy your freedom.
Yeah, well, I've got to get stuck in and start building.
Yeah. Get working, man.
Exactly. Cool. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, man. See you next week.
Later.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAVE or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for The Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for The Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.